Politics Uncensored with Ali Milani and Zoe Grunewald on Fubar Radio.
Hello, you're listening to Politics Uncensored with me, Ali Milani.
And me, Zoe Grunewald.
Coming up, well, there's only one thing to discuss on today's show, and that's the US election. Donald Trump has resoundingly defeated Kamala Harris and will be back in the White House in January next year as the 47th president of the United States.
But what will his presidency mean for America and, by extension, the international community moving forward? We'll discuss all of that throughout the programme.
As always, you can find us at Politics Uncensored UK on social media, all that and more coming up.
But first, it's the Week Unwrapped.
I want to thank the American people for the extraordinary honour of being elected your 47th president and your 45th president. And to every citizen, I will fight for you, for your family, and your future. Every single day, I will be fighting for you, and with every breath in my body, I will not rest until we have delivered the strong, safe, and prosperous America that our children deserve and that you deserve.
The outcome of this election is not what we wanted, not what we fought for, not what we voted for. But hear me when I say, the light of America's promise will always burn bright as long as we never give up and as long as we keep fighting.
As Ali said, there's only one thing to talk about this week. Well, the polls said it would be tight, but it was anything but. Donald Trump has resoundingly defeated Kamala Harris in the US presidential election. His Republican Party has also won the Senate and looks likely, although not certain, to win the House of Representatives as well, giving him the ability to do almost whatever he wants in power. It's, of course, a sad day for the Democrats, who had hoped to have their first woman of colour in the White House. And questions will be asked about how they lost to Trump, who campaigned on a ticket of removing illegal immigrants from within the US borders, and who surrounds himself with anti-abortion and conspiracy theory peddling allies. How will the implication of all of this impact the lives of America's many minority communities and the lives of American women as a whole? Some commentators have suggested the Democrats were out of touch with the working classes and that the support of Harris from numerous celebrities actually turned people to Trump. Ultimately, Harris did not consolidate the gains made by Joe Biden in 2020 and lost support from many communities that supported her predecessor. And there is also no telling what the effect of Joe Biden's pulling out of the race ultimately have done. Did the Democrats make a mistake in replacing him with Harris? And so we wait and we see how it will all unfold, the new regime and the Democrats soul-searching. And we haven't even mentioned the effect on the world order, Ukraine and Israel, NATO and the United Nations. We'll talk more about all of that with an expert later in the programme. But first, Ali, you, I believe, predicted a Trump win. I predicted, maybe very hopefully, that Kamala Harris would win. What went wrong for the Democrats?
Well, where to start? I think there are three key things that were the reason that the Democrats lost this election and Trump won it, and part of the reason why I predicted that Donald Trump would win the election. One being major and the other two being more minor. I think let's start with the major issue. The sole reason I think that Kamala Harris lost this election was because they replaced Joe Biden with Kamala Harris, but in the eyes of the voter, she was a continuity Joe Biden candidate. And as on election night, as the exit polls came out, the moment that I realized that I unfortunately might be right and she was in serious trouble was when the first nationwide exit poll came out. Mm-hmm. And in the first nationwide exit poll, it showed that 43% of Americans were dissatisfied with the direction that the US was going, and 29% were angry with the direction that the US was going. So a big majority were unhappy with the direction of the country. Biden's disapproval rating was at 58%. Mm. These are catastrophic numbers for an incumbency candidate to be running. Most Americans did not have a positive view on the economy, did not have a positive view on the future. And so the only way that an incumbency candidate can win that is if there is a huge turnout problem with their opposition, which Donald Trump was never going to have. Kamala Harris ultimately did not do enough to separate herself from a Joe Biden presidency. Because he stepped away so late, there was no real opportunity for the Democrats to have a real primary race where she could set out her stall as to how she's different, or maybe pick a candidate. They could have picked a candidate that wasn't so intrinsically linked with the Joe Biden administration. And so away from all of the sort of hipster analysis that we're seeing online about why Donald Trump won and all these sort of niche reasons, it goes back to sort of the economy stupid and sort of the incumbency factor, which a lot of candidates are struggling with around the country, around the world. And that is that people were not happy with the incumbent and so chose change. And Donald Trump for them represented that change. I think that's the primary reason why she lost, principally the economy, inflation, difficulty with families getting on. And she was attached very closely to the Biden campaign. The second was that Trump minimized the negative impact on himself from minority communities. He overperformed amongst Latinos massively compared to 2020 and even 2016. He overperformed with the African-American community, particularly black men. He overperformed with Muslim voters. He overperformed with all minority voters compared to 2020 and 2016.
How, and, Ali? How? Because I know you're right, but when I hear this, and I think about some of the things that Trump said during his campaign, some of his acolytes said during his campaign, you know, the comedian who called Puerto Rico a burning island of rubbish or whatever he said, you know, the level of vitriol leveled at immigrant communities.
Yeah.
How can anybody from those communities support Donald Trump? I don't understand.
Well, my understanding would be it's actually linked to point one that I said. People like to analyze minority communities as if they live in a different bubble to the rest of the country and that they have magically different priorities to white communities, for example. The reality is Latino communities, African-American communities are feeling the same economic strain the white communities are. And to a certain extent, what has possibly happened is they have looked at this election and gone, was I better off 4 years ago than I am now? Yes, I was, right? So I'm willing to overlook a lot of the Trump sort of the bombastic racist elements of what Donald Trump and his acolytes say, because my grocery bills might be cheaper, my gas bills might be cheaper, and I might have an easier time. That's one. The second element is this time the fear factor of Trump was completely gone for a lot of them. The sort of big bad wolf Trump. He's already been president for 4 years. We survived it. The world didn't go up in flames. The sky didn't fall down. That's what that's what the messaging was. That sort of big bad wolf scary factor kind of was sandpapered because he's already been president once. So and the country survived, if you will, if that's what you believe. So I think that had a huge element with it. But also, don't shoot me, Twitter and Instagram. It's a fact. People are going to hate me saying this. This was a different Trump candidate to 2020, 2016. He was actually far, far more restrained. In if you think of 2016 particularly, but also in 2020, when he was going out and saying openly racist things again and again and again, if you think of this election cycle, he was much more reined in.
It was more his fault, his sort of surrogates.
Yes, his surrogates were saying it. But you weren't getting Trump saying, for example, we've got all of these rapists and criminals coming through our border, for example, or these cartels are coming to take over our border, this invasion stuff. He still said some to keep his base happy, but it was a far more restrained Donald Trump. And that's particularly why he overperformed. And that had a huge impact. So if you look at Florida, for example, Florida has a very, very complex, diverse community. So you should take that with a pinch of salt. But nerds out there who might be interested, like me, look at some of the Latino counties in Florida. He flipped them from Biden winning them 15 to 20 points. Trump came out ahead in some of these counties. Now that had a huge impact. This was ultimately a close election. I know he won all seven swing states, but he actually won them with one or two marginal percentage points. So it wasn't an essential, like a blowout in all seven swing states. Even though he won all of the swing states, I think that had a huge element to it, was the sort of, and with minorities, the Muslim community, I am shocked that so many turned out for Trump, but there is such a vitriolic anger at the Biden administration over what, you know, they've seen as complicity in the genocide in Gaza that they've it's voting out of spite now.
So help me with this as well, because we can see that the Democrats were damaged by Biden's position on Gaza. How bad was that damage? And my other question would be, there's no sense from anyone that Donald Trump is going to be better for the plight of Palestinians than the Democrats were, is there?
Not if your head works.
Yeah.
But genuinely, I think it was spite and anger. I think people thought they're both terrible. They're both equally bad on Palestine. Mm. But the Democrats think that we are going to vote for them come what may, so let's punish them. Same thing happened in the UK with Labour Party. It was like, do we think that by not voting Labour in, there'll be a more sort of prosperous future for Palestinians or a possibility of peace? Probably not. Mm. But this group can't think that we're going to vote for them come what may. And so that had a huge impact. The third thing, sorry, that I was going to say is it's actually a terribly run campaign. I thought they made so many of the same mistakes that they made in 2016. When I know for a fact, based on connections I've got on the ground, that there were alarm bells being rung in Philadelphia 10 days before the general election saying, listen, turnout here is not what it should be. We're struggling with African-American black men, particularly in Philadelphia. I know in Wisconsin there were issues. I know in Michigan there were issues. And the central campaign didn't believe them. And instead, we're rallying in Texas. Mm. So we knew, we always knew, anyone who looked at this electoral map about 2 weeks before the election knew that Kamala Harris's path to 270 came through Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania. Forget about North Carolina and Georgia. Mm. You're not, if you overperform nationally, you might pick them up. But her path to 270 was always going to be through the blue wall. Mm. And instead, she's out rallying in Texas. Mm. It's the same mistakes that Hillary Clinton made. Hillary Clinton didn't rally at all a campaign in Wisconsin, which she ultimately lost, which she was campaigning in other places. For example, Virginia, I always believe they're always going to take. So some of the same infrastructural sort of issues with the campaign came up again.
So this is them taking what they see as safe Democrat voters for granted.
Yes, yeah. And I think they thought that maybe they wanted to open up multiple paths to 270, including Georgia and North Carolina, maybe even Arizona and Nevada. And look, Joe Biden had a unique relationship with the sort more working class white vote, even though I think he himself wasn't a great candidate. But he had more union connections, for example. I don't think Kamala Harris did nearly enough to court the union vote. There were quite a lot of the unions in America refused to endorse her, for example. And so she struggled with that union vote. She massively underperformed in the suburbs, which is Joe Biden won 2020 in the suburbs. That's how he won the general election in 2020. And she underperformed him in the suburbs. And then there's the last thing. The most surprising thing coming out of this election for me was that white women voted for Donald Trump, which surprised me, given that if you actually look at the exit polls and the opinion poll around the country, reproductive rights and women's health care is so high up on the agenda of all women in America, and yet white women broke away in essence and voted for Donald Trump. Not by much, 52%, but it's still a majority. I think that hurt Kamala Harris, because I think she will have hoped to eat into that vote much more. And so the overarching, I guess, without me ranting, and I'm sure people are tired of it by now, is she underperformed in every single metric. Minority votes, women, working class votes, unions, suburbs. She underperformed everywhere. And that was because the infrastructure of the campaign was so poor. It's because the way she was selected as a candidate was atrocious. Biden held on for too long. There wasn't a primary. There wasn't a break from the current administration. And ultimately, the country thought we were in the wrong direction and felt better off 4 years ago. Remember, people went into this poll for the first time being able to compare two candidates which they believed they had lived under. They did 4 years under Donald Trump, and they've done 4 years under Joe Biden, in which they saw Kamala Harris's continuity Biden, and they all felt better off under Donald Trump. Now, there are a million and one reasons why that is. That has nothing to do with Donald Trump. And actually, the damage of the last 4 years has a lot to do with Donald Trump. But they ultimately made a choice based on the initial exit poll, which is the country's in the wrong direction.
So I want to ask you, Ali, before we go to the break. You obviously campaigned for Bernie Sanders in past elections in swing states. What is the mindset of these people who vote for Trump this time around?
Depends who you're asking for. Look, he has a huge sort of what I would call a sort of white lash, men lash base who feel like a lot of their privilege is being taken away from them. Particularly, I think there's a huge misogyny factor, which I wanted to ask you about actually, what you thought about that. There's no doubt that young men turned out for Donald Trump in a higher number than was expected, and a lot of that is that sort of the sort of Andrew Tate, the Joe Rogan sort of listeners, if that makes sense. I don't want to say all Joe Rogan listeners, Andrew Tate, but it tracks.
It's like the manosphere.
Yeah. And so he has a base that is very, very pro sort of his position, his hard right positioning on things, sort of racism, etc., misogyny, etc. But he won the independents. And I say I was really concerned when the initial exit poll came out. I knew she had lost. In fact, I told my wife to go to sleep when this exit, because she kind of stayed up to watch with me. But, I mean, she can't stand Trump. So at the point that the exit poll, I think it was the state exit poll in Georgia or North Carolina came out, in which he had won independent voters, registered independents by 9 points, which is a 20-point swing from Joe Biden. So he's got his base. And the way American elections work is both sides have a base that's going to solidly turn out for them. And there is about a 15 to 20% independent in the middle. Whoever wins them wins. And he was picking them up in droves because of largely, in my opinion, because of the economy. And so his base plus the independents was enough. I do want to ask you before we go, because I don't know if we've got much time. Two women candidates have now lost. There's undoubtedly a factor of misogyny here. What did you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's hard to untangle. What we're seeing is this massive rise between men becoming more conservative and women becoming more liberal across the globe from what has happened here. I'm sure we'll talk about it more with our next guest, but I think there's something really important in the language Donald Trump used when he was talking about Kamala throughout the campaign, that he allowed his surrogates to use, describing her as a play toy that would be toyed with by these leaders on the world stage. Donald Trump made this an election about his masculinity versus her femininity and which of the two would make a better president. And the country chose the man. And I think, I'd love to talk about this more. I think it's really, really important. But I would say she didn't lose because she was a woman, but Trump's victory is a victory for misogyny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think the question will always be coming now that we've had two women lose, as to whether the country is in a space where it will elect a woman. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Well, we'll talk about all that next. That was The Week Unwrapped. Coming up, we'll look at just how Donald Trump intends to change the lives of the average American. What will his domestic policies look like? That's next on Politics Uncensored.
Politics Uncensored with Ali Milani and Zoe Grunewald on Fubar Radio. That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum.
What's kind of that one golden thing that you like to share with people who are trying to start a business?
That's a really easy one, because I have a mantra which, you know, I say to young people all the time, and they really get it when I say it. And it goes like, don't undermine who you are by comparing yourself with someone else. It's because we are all different. Why each of us is special.
You're listening to Fubar Radio. Download our app now to listen to your favorite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all Fubar shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app. Just search for Fubar Radio on the Apple and Google app stores. Yay! The Fubar Radio app. Get it today. Get it today.
One in five people in the UK are disabled, and it's not always visible. So if we've made ourselves at home in priority spaces on the bus or train, surrounded by our shopping bags or bikes, we could be making it harder for the people who need that space more than us. So let's not forget about the people we share our journeys with, and keep priority spaces clear for others. Remember, it's everyone's journey.
When it comes to heart attacks, you might be surprised to hear the symptoms don't always feel severe. You could experience a squeezing across the chest, a feeling of unease, a sense something's not quite right. Don't be tempted to dismiss the signs and wait to see what happens. The faster you seek medical help, the better your chances. It's never too early to call 999 and describe your symptoms. Your NHS is here for you.
What the Health with Gabby Allen.
Three words to describe yourself.
Weird, funny, and quirky. I'm a strange guy.
Oh, I love that. That's good. Not many men would say that. Normally they're like, yeah, strong.
No, you know what? That's what people think I'm going to be like. They see like the gym and the muscles and the tattoos and they think I'm going to be like this, like serious, like fuck boy, like laugh. You know what I mean? And then they meet me. And I'm like a Jim Carrey. I'm like a muscly Jim Carrey.
Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
What's going on in the DMs? Are you getting naughty pictures from fans? Girls, are you getting the odd little pic? I bet they're popping the DMs.
Yeah, the DMs are doing all right. I've got a lot of cousins, big family, so they're all touching base.
Yeah.
There's a few girls in there as well. I've had some fruity videos come through.
Oh, so, tell us a little bit more.
You go there?
Yeah, we're going there. Access all areas, mate.
Follow us at Politics Uncensored UK for more from the show.
Welcome back. You're listening to Politics Uncensored with me, Ali Milani.
And me, Zoe Grunewald. Okay, back to the US election and just how a second Trump presidency will affect the United States domestically. Now, there's been a lot of talk around the economy, around immigration, and of course around women's rights, to name just a few electoral issues. But let's talk about what's going to happen after January the 20th next year. Well, joining us on the programme to discuss this is Dr. Pippa Malmgren, an economist, CEO of Geopolitica and C10 Lab, and a former advisor to then-President George W. Bush and the UK government. Pippa, thank you so much for joining us. We'll get our teeth into what domestic policy we can expect from President Trump, shortly. But broadly, what's the reaction been across the US to his historic comeback win?
Honestly, everyone is in a state of shock, including the Trump team. Mm. For 2 weeks before the actual election day, they were seeing this very, very strong data, and they thought something was wrong with the data. They couldn't figure out how could they possibly have so much support, because this is a historic turnout, and to have a potential sweep of not just the White House, but the House and the Senate as well. Democrats, of course, everywhere are completely in shock and incredulous at the outcome. And I'm sure international observers are also experiencing. And everyone's in a kind of state of cognitive dissonance because the news media stories that we've had for the last 2 years in the main gave no hint that this was going to happen. So people are trying to like reorient, you know, where am I? I don't understand the world. I thought I did, but I don't. And so that's kind of a universal feeling. It's a very delicate, sensitive moment in the US as a result.
Pippa, if I may ask, I want to ask how this Trump presidency might be different to the first time around. A lot of the institutional checks and balances in the US kind of resisted his more extremist tendencies back in 2016 through to 2020. But it seems now, I mean, he himself has said outwardly that he's got a sort of vendetta against the sort of deep state elements that held him back. How much more is this Trump unleashed in 2024?
So this is a really good and an important question. And I think Trump version one will be very different from what we're going to see in Trump version two. But it's not necessarily what you think. First of all, you got to understand that what just happened is almost like a quiet coup by the technology community. So Elon Musk and the founder of Palantir, Peter Thiel, these guys basically rallied around Trump with a view that if he becomes president, they can bring all their technological capabilities to the government databases and figure out what's really going on. And so Trump is now surrounded by a team that are kind of faster, better, smarter, and he's a lot slower compared to where he was when he won the presidency the first time around. So yes, he may have some angry tendencies, but he's also got a group of people around him that are very likely to try to control, constrain, keep him measured. And the most important person in this respect is Bobby Kennedy. And of course, Nicole Shanahan, his vice presidential candidate, because it was these two that said, number one, we'll bring our youth vote. And remember, Kennedy owns the under 45 and the youth vote in the United States. And second, let's bring the tech people in so that we can get a clearer picture and some more effective results and kind of less of the angry Trump, you know, released on the public. So I think people are not understanding. Yes, Trump won, but he's brought in a kind of technology team that is really going to be deciding the tone and direction.
That's really interesting to me. And I wonder if you think that there might be then Trump is he's quite protectionist, you know. He talks about trade tariffs, he talks about, you know, making America great again. He's quite sort of inward looking. But my feeling about these tech gurus is they obviously, you know, it's kind of within their interest to expand outwards, to kind of look at things on a global scale. Is there not going to be a tension there between what Trump is promising his supporters and what these tech people want?
Not necessarily. There's alignment on a number of things, but one of them is, again, the difference between Trump version one and two is that today America is manufacturing again. It has become a major center. In fact, the Mexico, Texas, Southwest region is probably the most important supply chain in the world now, because Mexico has already effectively replaced China, at least for the U.S. market. It has higher quality control. It's more deeply integrated into U.S. manufacturing. So, and, you know, everybody talks about the immigration from Mexico into the U.S. Nobody mentions all the people in private jets flying to Mexico to build out new productive capacity. And China's trading with Mexico as well. So it's kind of the back door for the U.S. and China to have a different relationship. So the tech community understands that international trade is a very sophisticated thing and it moves very fluidly. Trump can talk about, we're going to protect the U.S. by introducing tariffs. And that's true to a degree, specifically with China. But it's also tactical. It's meant to be a pressure on China to get them to behave differently. So if they do comply, and we do get better results from Trump's point of view, then tariffs can serve a different purpose. And so a sub-story that you have to understand is Trump is looking to change the tax revenue structure of the United States and move it away from heavy reliance on income tax to greater reliance on tariffs and introducing a value-added tax. And the U.S. never had a VAT because every state argued about how much are we going to get. But today, if you have a sweep between the White House, the Senate, and the House, it's much easier to pass innovative tax legislation and to introduce something like a value-added tax. So we'll hear a lot about tariffs, but it's not the only source of revenue that he's thinking of. And so the tech people get that this is a more complex picture than it looks at first.
I want to ask about that sweeping element you spoke about, because in all the coverage that I have seen, both in the US and the UK, I actually watched CNN on election night because the British commentary was so insufferable. The difference this time, and one of the things that's overlooked, is the Republicans have taken control of the Senate. They're looking like they're going to take control of the House. I don't know, the Congress. I don't know if that's been called yet.
Not yet.
But it's looking like that. So he has, while he may have constraints in terms of his personal relationships and who he appoints in his cabinet, he has all the arms of the state that he didn't have before to do what he wants to do. So while we may see Trump version 1 and Trump version 2 being different in terms of being more constrained depending on people who's around him, he's got far more power to do what he wants to do now.
Well, that's very true. And this is the first time in decades that we've seen any president have the House and the Senate as well. This is a highly unusual moment. And certainly Republicans will consistently say this is a mandate by any measure. Democrats will quibble about that, but it's kind of hard to argue against it. This is an extraordinary vote, because the president won the popular vote as well, mm-hmm. not just the Electoral College vote.
Yeah, so only the second time that a Republican has done that since the 1980s.
Exactly, exactly. So, you know, it's uncomfortable for those who really dislike him because they're like, it's really hard to say he doesn't have a mandate. But plus, unfortunately, for Kamala Harris, she actually underperformed Biden in, I think I'm right in saying every single county in the country. I think that CNN actually said there wasn't one single location where her numbers were higher than Biden's. So it's a kind of decisive outcome, although people will argue about that. But yeah, you're right. He has a very different position than most presidents. Now, having said that, it still doesn't mean he can do anything he feels like. You still have to build consensus. It still has to pass the sort of public smell test. The Supreme Court is still there, although that's aligned with him too, right? So that's a fourth branch of government that's aligned. He will be able to pursue most of what he said he wants to pursue.
And just sort of quickly before we finish, Pippa, I wanted to just touch on the abortion ban conversation. You know, Trump's slightly sort of, I guess he equivocated a little bit during the campaign. You know, he didn't really have a consistent message. He said during the presidential debate that he would not sign into law a national abortion ban. But obviously there are concerns about the influence of things like Project 2025 and the impact that will have on women's reproductive rights. What do you see happening in this space? I mean, should women be concerned?
Well, women are concerned across the country and have been ever since Roe versus Wade was repealed by the Supreme Court, which, of course, was the landmark legislation that gave all Americans the right to choose on abortions. And that was something that was so shocking. No one ever imagined that Roe versus Wade wouldn't be there. So that came as a surprise. I do think one tricky part of this puzzle, because the Democrats bet heavily that women would vote against Trump on this issue. And in fact, they didn't as much as they expected. And maybe one reason why is because Trump's position is let's the states decide, which is a very traditional position in the U.S. of Republicans saying, don't let Washington give you a blanket rule. Instead, you guys keep the power at your local state level. And many of the states had their own abortion initiative on the ballot. So in some states, a lot of women felt, well, I'm going to get abortion in my state. So I'm good with that. And then I can vote for Trump on other issues like I don't want a tax hike or I don't want immigration or whatever those other issues were. So it got parsed apart because of the state level separate voting system on this. But both, Trump has been clear, no national ban. So that's at least something. The states, they're all going to go different ways. And so this is where Americans go, you know, I don't want to be in an abortion ban state, so I moved from Texas to Vermont.
Brilliant. All right. Well, thank you so much. That was Dr. Pippa Malgren, an economist, CEO of Geopolitica and C10 Lab, and a former advisor to then President George W. Bush and to the UK government.
It's Ali Milani and Zoe Grunewald with Politics Uncensored. FUBAR Radio.
Ali, we just heard from Pippa Malmgren, a former special assistant for economic policy to former President George W. Bush. What did you think of what she had to say?
Yeah, I agree with a large part of her analysis and what she had to say, and it's kind of consistent with what we've been saying. Although I'm not convinced on a more constrained Trump because Elon Musk is around him. I actually think Elon Musk is the real-life version of Lex Luthor, so I think that's a massive problem. And I'm more fearful about Trump this time than I was last time, and I'll tell you why. I think last time the American system was built in response to a king. So a lot of the checks and balances and the gridlock that you see in the American systems and why things don't happen are by design. They're built to stop tyrants and kings because it was built after the American War of Independence and the resistance against the monarch that was really, really far away. So it's all built in that system. The problem is that system has been withered away by Republicans so much that I don't know if those checks and balances are in place. The president is supposed to be held to account and constrained in their most extremist tendencies by the US Senate and the US Congress. Mm. Well, they're going to have both those houses and a Republican Party that you like that sees Trump as this godlike figure and will never break away from him, that takes that checks and balances in place. The Supreme Court is supposed to be the ultimate legal barrier towards a presidency and their more extremist tendencies. Well, he's filled the US Supreme Court, made it a political sort of space. It always was a sort of political space, but he has filled it with extremists, in essence. And so that element is gone. So he has the executive, he has the judicial branch, mm-hmm. and he has the legislative branch, all of which are singing by the same hymn sheet. So what we have this time is Trump unleashed. Mm. The only thing that stands in terms of a check and balance against Donald Trump in the next 4 years will be the Fourth Estate, and that's journalism. The only hope that the American people have, I think, of constraining the most extremist elements of Donald Trump is good, solid journalism.
And my understanding is that Trump has made comments during the campaign about what he would like to do with certain...
He said he's going to put his enemies into prison. Yeah. Yeah, he said he's going to imprison.
But specific news stations, right?
Yeah,
my understanding. Yeah,
yeah. People who have railed against him, and I think that is particularly dangerous. The other point that we haven't spoken about because there's so much to speak about Donald Trump is he's made history in another sense. Mm. He's the first felon to be elected president of the United States. He's got outstanding criminal charges. Is he going to pardon himself? Can he pardon himself? No president has even tried in history. So much of the U.S. system is about to be tested.
Mm, okay. Coming up, we're going to get more reaction from Trump's presidential election victory and ask what it means for the rest of the world. All that and more next.
Politics Uncensored with Ali Milani and Zoe Grunewald. That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum.
What's kind of that one golden thing that you like to share with people who are trying to start a business?
That's a really easy one, because I have a mantra which, you know, I say to young people all the time, and they really get it when I say it. And it goes like, don't undermine who you are by comparing yourself with someone else. It's because we are all different. Why each of us is special.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio.
Download our app now to listen to your favorite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app.
Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google app stores.
The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today.
Get it today.
It was calm on the beach, so I took my little girl out on the water. Then we hit the wind, and it blew us out to sea, faster than we could paddle back. And we learned our lesson from these guys, the crew who got us home. Thank you.
Respect the water and watch out for the winds. In an emergency, call 999 and ask for the Coast Guard.
Registering to vote means you can take part in the way decisions are made in the UK. When you register to vote, you are then able to cast your vote at local and national elections. You can help choose who runs your area and makes decisions about things you care about. Millions of people in the UK aren't registered to vote, and they miss out on having their voice heard. It's quick and easy to register. It only takes 5 minutes. You can do it online, or you can ask for a paper form at your local council. Register to vote now at gov.uk/register to vote.
What the Health with Gabby Allen.
Three words to describe yourself.
Weird, funny, and quirky. I'm a strange guy.
Oh, I love that. That's good. Not many men would say that. Normally they're like, yeah, strong.
No, that's, you know what? That's what people think I'm going to be. Like, they see, like, the gym and the muscles and the tattoos, and they think I'm going to be, like, this, like, serious, like, fuckboy, like, lad. You know what I mean? And then they meet me. And I'm like a Jim Carrey. I'm like a muscly Jim Carrey.
Access All Areas with Bobby Norris.
What's going on in the DMs? Are you getting naughty pictures from fans? Girls, are you getting the odd little pic? I bet they're popping the DMs.
Yeah, the DMs are doing all right. I've got a lot of cousins, big family, so they're all touching base.
Yeah.
There's a few girls in there as well. I've had some fruity videos come through.
Oh, so, tell us a little bit more.
You
no,
go, you go there.
Yeah, we're going there. Access all areas, mate.
Politics Uncensored on FUBAR Radio.
Welcome back. You're listening to Politics Uncensored with me, Ali Malani.
And me, Zoe Grunewald. Now, continuing our coverage of the US election, just what does a Trump victory mean for the world order? What will Trump's foreign policy agenda look like? Should NATO and Europe be worried about their security? And what about the conflicts in Ukraine and the Middle East? What does the future hold for them? Looking back home, what about the government? This Labour Party, while in opposition, was very critical of President-elect Trump. Could that have an impact on the special relationship? Joining us to discuss all of this is Dr. Nicholas Westcott, a professor of practice in the Department of Diplomacy and International Studies at SOAS, University of London, and a former senior British diplomat. Thank you very much for joining us, Dr. Westcott. Many countries are probably now quite worried about an incoming Trump presidency, Ukraine being the obvious one that springs to mind. How do you assess how Trump is likely to shape American foreign policy over the next 4 years? And what big impact do you see that having on the world?
He has declared that he wants to pursue an America First policy abroad as at home. And there are about three key elements of that. Firstly, he doesn't want the US to get embroiled in overseas conflicts. Secondly, he wants to contest with China supremacy of the world. And thirdly, he wants to ensure that the world economy operates in a way which will enable him to, as he sees it, rebuild US jobs, US manufacturing, so by the imposition of tariffs. So those are the three pillars of what he's doing. And that will govern his relationship with all the different countries and groups in the world. As you say, some countries are going to be more worried than others. China is worried because both he has expressed severe hostility towards China and he wants to impose tariffs, and he's very unpredictable. Ukraine is very worried because he said he wants to end the Ukraine war on day one, but without exactly revealing how he will do that. But the fear is he will withhold support to Ukraine, forcing them to cut a deal with Vladimir Putin that concedes land.
Yeah, can I? That's was going to be my question, because there's probably two on the foreign policy front. There's two priorities really as a matter of urgency right now. One is Ukraine. One is Gaza. I want to start by asking about Ukraine. He has been asked multiple times about his links to Vladimir Putin and his closeness seen to Russia, but also on Ukraine, he's used the words negotiating a way out, which seems to imply concessions on land, Ukraine's sovereign land. Would that put him at odds with European countries, France, Germany, the UK?
Very much so. The European countries have, at least formally, with the exception of Hungary, expressed their strong support for Ukraine's territorial integrity and their support for Ukraine in recovering the whole of their land and ensuring that Russia does not gain from its aggression. Mm-hmm. And hitherto, the Biden administration has supported that as well, and eventually, despite some delays in Congress, delivered significant support. But as we know, Ukraine is suffering. It doesn't have the same level of resources that Russia does. And the sort of meat grinder campaign that the Russians are pursuing in Donetsk and Zaporizhia is grinding them down. They're short of manpower. They're still short of weapons.
Dr. Westcott, can I ask you to make a prediction looking forward? I know academics don't like to do this because there are so many variables. But if that comes to a head where Donald Trump insists that Ukraine has to be compromise on its territorial sovereignty in some way, shape or form, and the Europeans stand steadfast saying, no, it's all of Ukraine that needs to be returned. If that comes to a tipping point, which side wins and where do we end up?
The US has far greater financial and military firepower than Europe can deploy. So either Europe would have to transform its support for Ukraine and double, quadruple the kind of support it's giving, of which there is no sign at the moment, or Ukraine will indeed come under pressure. Mm. And yeah, we can see from the quite interesting message that Zelensky said to Trump, he anticipates that this could be a problem, and he wants to try and get Trump on side for not just throwing everything into Putin's hands, but actually trying to cut a real deal where he gets some security guarantees and a line is drawn over where the Russians will stop. Zelensky has been quite careful recently not to rule out territorial concessions, but he is clearly has a weaker hand with Trump's election.
And on Israel, where do we see a Trump presidency altering this conflict, or can it alter this conflict? I mean, what is your prediction for how Trump will deal with Benjamin Netanyahu?
Yeah, Netanyahu is cock-a-hoop and has made no bones about that. He now feels that the US taps, which have remained entirely open despite the problems with the conflict and the warning sounds from the Biden administration, they have never stopped supplying arms and enabling, providing financial support. So that will continue. The key issue is now over Iran. Israel will continue its attacks in Lebanon to try and destroy Hezbollah, its attacks in Gaza to destroy Hamas. There will be even less pressure from the US to actually restrain themselves. Mm. So the situation of Palestinians looks likely to get worse. But the question is Iran. And Netanyahu wants to go after Iran. He can't do that without explicit US support. And nobody knows what Trump's position will be on this, because, as we've said, that would risk drawing the US into another forever war in the Middle East. Mm. Just exactly the thing he knows his base do not want.
Mm.
So he has Netanyahu on one side trying to drag him in, and his own base on the other saying, well, you know, we don't want to get involved here. And we don't know what Trump will think, what he will do.
Mm.
As we know, his whole foreign policy is based very much on personal relations. Netanyahu is a master of managing that. So he will try and tug Trump in.
Mm.
But and Trump has no love of Iran. He doesn't want to defend the Iranians. But on the other hand, Iran now has increasing support from Russia and from China. Mm. So he would run serious risks if he allows himself to be drawn into a US-Iran conflict.
Yeah, I think China has openly said more recently a quote attributed directly to Xi Jinping that they would support their support for Iran is sort of unilateral. And so any sort of conflict between Israel and America and Iran is likely to draw in some way, shape or form China, Russia and others in. Trump has been talking a lot on the campaign trail, particularly at the end, about making peace and the whole thing of no new wars was started under Donald Trump. How much is he going to be protective of that, given he doesn't have to stand for re-election?
Yeah, I think he's very serious. His America First foreign policy is quite isolationist. He doesn't really believe in the US being beholden to others. That's his whole shtick in relation to NATO. You know, Europe's been getting a free ride. They've got to look after themselves. You know, Putin can do whatever the hell he likes with NATO members if they don't pay their way. And the same with the UN. He will back Israel and trying to boot the UN out. He has no love of the UN. He doesn't want anybody to tell the US what to do or to create obligations that require him to do things. So that is bad news for the multilateral system. It's good news for China and Russia and middle powers like Turkey, like the UAE and Saudi Arabia, who will feel that's fine. We can go ahead and do what we want now. The US are not going to intervene and stop us.
Yeah, you...
So we're looking at a world of more conflict.
Nick, we don't have long left, unfortunately, but I just want to ask you a quick question because I want to talk really quickly about the implications of a Trump presidency for us in the UK. What do you think is going to be the biggest concern for the UK government when it comes to a Trump presidency? What's going to be high up on their watch list?
They're going to be subject to a tug of war between wanting to be nice, to keep on side with the US, which is important, but also Europe, who will be quite in a position of some antagonism with the US.
Mm-hmm.
The US will want the UK to prove its loyalty to the US.
Yeah, Dr. Wilson, sorry, if I can just interrupt quickly, because I want to ask, you spoke about how so much of Trump's foreign policy is personal relationships. The governing party in the Labour Party in the UK has had its major politicians tweeting things like calling him a fascist and a KKK sympathiser, and had a scandal in which Trump complained to the FEC about Labour's interference in his election for Kamala Harris. How much is that likely to influence?
That will. Trump is a bully. Any sign of weakness that he can exploit to make you dependent on him or put you at his disadvantage, he will use. So the Labour has some road to climb back up to get to be sure of a warm welcome in Washington.
Thank you very much. That was Dr. Nicholas Westcott, a professor of practice in the Department of Diplomacy and International Studies at SOAS University of London and a former senior British diplomat.
Politics Uncensored with Ali Milani and Zoe Grunewald on Fubar Radio.
So, Ali, we just heard there from former senior British diplomat Dr. Nicholas Westcott. What do you make of this? How do you think Trump is going to shape the world order in the next 4 years?
Well, on foreign policy, Trump benefits and is hurt by this theory within international relations of the madman theory. Mm. He's very unpredictable. So I'll give you a couple of examples in Trump version 1, 2016 to 2020. The personal relationships point that Dr. Westcott made is absolutely true. Trump thrives on personal relationships. So, for example, the person that he spent the most amount of time with in terms of foreign leaders speaking one-to-one with was President Erdogan of Turkey, which is not the sort of person that you would ordinarily think that he would align himself with or even spend much time talking to. But Erdogan was a master in sort of massaging the Trump ego and speaking to him in those terms. The other one was Syria. Trump authorized an airstrike in Syria, if reports are to be believed, based on pictures that he saw of the crimes that Assad was committing against the Syrian people, and those pictures were enough to turn him. Mm. You know, Trump has no real political ideology when it comes to foreign policy, other than the isolationism that kind of drives him generally. Mm. So that kind of benefits him in when leaders like Vladimir Putin and others look at him and Xi Jinping look at him. You can't tell where he's going to go next. When he draws red lines, you worry that he will actually use the massive arsenal that the US has at their disposal. Equally, his isolationism and his influence, the way he's influenced by foreign leaders, is of huge concern. Mm. In the election itself, by the way, everyone will know, if you watch the election coverage, there were bomb threats called in to key Democratic areas in Michigan and other areas that closed polling stations that we know, based on US intelligence reports, came from Russia. Mm. Right? So Russia was clearly invested, again, influencing these elections. So I think it's uncertainty in a massive scale at a time when the world needs stability. Mm. So it's a huge problem.
I mean, the one thing we didn't talk about because we didn't get time, obviously, is this relationship on a domestic level between Trump and Nigel Farage, which I think is going to be high on the list of worries for Keir Starmer. We know that there has been, Russia's support for Nigel Farage in the Reform Party at the last general election. Trump's win will only put the wind in Farage's sails.
He was at Mar-a-Lago.
Yes.
He was at Mar-a-Lago yesterday.
I mean, serving the people of Clacton by flying over to give Donald Trump a big pat on the back.
Were we talking about election interference not long ago? I swear we were talking about
it. It doesn't count when it comes to Nigel Farage, apparently. But anyway, I think that is going to be of a big concern to the UK government. And I would not be surprised at all, knowing the way Donald Trump and Nigel Farage communicate and how they make decisions, if Nigel Farage wasn't putting words in Donald Trump's ear to the tune of make life as difficult for Keir Starmer as possible.
How far do you think Keir Starmer will go to try and mend that relationship, given that he was one of the ones that said some very nasty things about Donald Trump?
I think he's going to try and be managerial about this, but I think when you're dealing with a populist, it doesn't work like that. And Donald Trump's ego seems to drive him. So
they're such polar opposites, though. They're the ultimate difference in politician, really, because you've got this big, bombastic celebrity entertainer, and then you've got Keir Starmer. Mm. So,
and you know, what's going to happen if Keir Starmer has to cozy up to the EU because he can't cozy up to the US? That puts more wind in Nigel Farage's sails.
That's a great point. The UK doesn't really have anywhere to look. We can't look across the Atlantic now because Trump is going to take a lot of these things personally, and we can't look to Europe. So we're kind of...
Maybe we should look into that next week's show.
We should, definitely. Well, that's it from Politics Uncensored today. Join us next Thursday at 5 p.m. where we unwrap the week's political talking points. You can stay up to date with the show by following at Politics Uncensored UK on social media, where you can also find me at Ali Milani UK.
And you can find me at Zoe_Grunewald.
If you've missed any of today's show, you can listen back and catch up at FUBARradio.com. I've been Ali Milani in the studio with Zoe Grunewald. Thank you for listening.
Politics Uncensored on FUBAR Radio.